Welcome to Follow the Sound, this week in music history. Each week, we dive into the deep ocean of the internet to search for those pearls of music history for your enjoyment. I am your host, Brian Kroc, and along with me, as always, is Jacob Crumb.
A man is as alive as he can communicate.
And Greg Harvey.
Holy diver for pearls of music history.
Holy diver!
You've been gone too long in the music history.
See, I only knew the holy diver line. That was it. I'm sorry.
Terrible. You don't know the line about the tiger?
No, it didn't pop into my head.
You can see his stripes, but you know he's clean. Because he takes a shower every day.
So, welcome to Follow the Sound this week in music history. I hope that you are going to have fun with us today, because I think that we are going to have ourselves a grand old time. But before we get into the actual show, if you want to help us out, go to our website, followthesoundpodcast.com, and click on the Amazon banner on the right-hand side, and that'll take you to Amazon. Just simple, easy. You do all your shopping there. It's like after going through us, we get a little bit of money just for the referral. It is quick, easy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra.
But Brian, do I have to clear my cookies?
No, you don't clear your cookies at all. You just have to click on the banner, or you can go to followthesoundpodcast.com.
Do I have to log out of my Amazon and then log back into it?
No,
I just click on the banner.
Just click on the banner, and that's it.
That sounds really simple for someone to do.
It is really simple and easy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra except a couple more seconds of your time. Like, at least the first time. And then once you're shopping, it's all very simple. And, of course, we'd like to thank lineupmedia.fm. You can find quality podcasts all over on lineupmedia.fm. And, I mean, I've gone over them numerous times. I cannot speak more highly of This Day in History or Armenia Proud, which is actually one of the best shows, I think, on the network. And, of course, Three Horsemen Show, which is a great wrestling show where they talk about classic wrestlers. And
like Ric Flair.
Oh, of course they talk about Ric
Flair. And Arn Anderson.
They talk about all of the old school guys. And, I mean, they know a ton about the old school guys. All I remember is from the video game WCW versus NWO Revenge.
Yes. In my opinion, talking about wrestling, much better than watching it.
So,
fun fact.
So yeah, go to lineupmedia.fm. You can find all sorts of great podcasts on there for your listening pleasure. So let's get into the week. This is going June 12th through June 16th, and we got some fun stuff to do.
Mm-hmm.
Starting off on June 12th.
Ooh, you know what? I hate to lead with what is my pick for the best story in this entire show, but here
it
is.
Sometimes it happens.
Sometimes it works out that way. June 5th, 1941, Chick Corea, the great jazz pianist that he is born in Chelsea, Massachusetts. He has been referred to as the most influential jazz pianist since John Coltrane, and worked with folks of like...
Almost botched that, didn't you?
Miles Davis. Herbie Hancock, Keith Jarrett, Stanley Clarke, Bobby McFerrin, but I did botch that one, Bela Fleck, and of course, the genius that he is, L. Ron Hubbard.
Oh, really now?
Yes, because in addition to all the good work that Chick Corea has done, he's also made possibly the worst jazz album ever, Space Jazz.
Space Jazz.
With L. Ron Hubbard, which was like, I don't know. It was another L. Ron Hubbard idea of like...
I don't know why, but Tom Jones popped into my head when you said space jazz.
Space jazz.
You're the space jazz.
I was thinking...
Weird.
Welcome to the space jazz. It's your jazz. Here's your chance. Do the space jazz.
And here's another one of his credits, Brian, and I know you've listened to this. The audiobook for Battlefield Earth, score, done by Chick Corea.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah.
I did go through the audiobook of Battlefield Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's one of the few audiobooks that's completely scored.
Yeah. They've been doing that more often. They call them audio dramas.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember going through that one and thinking like, man, this must have come from the mind of a psychopath. But the music was good. So
the music was really good. Unlike Space Jazz, which is awful. Unless you just are like, I gotta hear L. Ron Hubbard sing.
Yeah.
don't.
Yeah, man, I got to tell you, it's a complete side note. The more and more I've been learning about L. Ron Hubbard, the more and more I just think that he was, like, just horrible.
Yeah, I love, if you look up, like, quotes from him on Brainy Quote, they're just all quotes from other people that he's redone. Like, but less eloquently.
Yeah.
Like, a man is alive as he can communicate. That's just a misquote from, like, King Henry, the Seventh of France. Or no. Sorry, excuse me. Holy Roman Empire. Right, who said that a man can communicate, or a man is as much a man as many languages. Or no, as many languages as a man has, he is that many times a man.
The only thing to fear itself is fear.
Yeah, like, I mean, seriously, they're terrible.
Oh,
just
that's
like
great.
Such an ineloquent asshole. Anyway. Man. I think we haven't talked enough about Chick Corea when we're talking about
Chick
Corea.
Sorry, you sidetracked me with the L. Ron Hubbard.
I know.
You shouldn't have done that, because I've been watching like a crap ton of stuff about Scientology recently. So.
It just goes to show that even though Chick worked with all those greats, everybody also has a few duds in their life. And it makes it more relatable.
Right. Right. Like, everyone has their simply having a wonderful Christmas time.
Yes, exactly.
Simply having
wonderful space jazz time.
Oh, you know, let's just hit the next story.
Go for it.
All right. 1959, your favorite and my favorite. John Linnell is born in New York from They Might Be Giants.
Sweet.
Oh, yeah.
I like the skinny They Might Be Giants.
The skinny guy from They Might Be Giants.
Not that anyone else is huge in the band. He is a slender build.
You know what's funny is that I've seen They Might Be Giants like in concert, but I honestly can't remember anything about the show.
Really? Oh, man.
Yeah.
I was just listening to one of their live albums the other day and realizing how much I really enjoyed the live album, even more so like than the studio album, because for example, the one that, you know, starts, I met someone at the dog show. She was holding my left arm. That's the one about angels. But yes. Like their live version rocks, like kicks a lot more booty than it. Oh, and another great version too was The Sun. You know the song? The sun is a mass of incandescent gas. Well,
gigantic nuclear furnace.
That's right. We
learned
so
hydrogen is built into helium
at a temperature of millions of degrees.
That's right. I do remember it because they did that song.
Yeah. And then the live version, they'll play it like faster. It'll be like, the sun is a mass of incandescent gas. Yeah. So that's great. Happy birthday, John.
Yeah, we love you.
So, 1965, the Beatles were included in the Queen's Birthday Honors list, which they each received the MBE, which is the, it's like the British, it's not knighthood, but it's like a step below that. Forgot what that is, actually.
Oh.
But protests poured into Buckingham Palace. Including Hector Dupuy, I'm guessing is how to say his name.
Yeah, that's a good guess.
Said, British royalty has put me on the same level as a bunch of vulgar numbskulls.
Vulgar numbskulls. Those nillywats.
It's like, let me see. It's something like the medal of the British Empire.
It's the most excellent order of the British Empire.
That's what it is.
An order of chivalry rewarding contributions to the arts and sciences.
Yeah. So, I forgot. You don't really get anything like bonus-wise for getting this award.
You
but
get
it's
a
still,
cool medal, though.
That's a great medal, man. That looks like almost official. Like, somebody fought
in
a war.
It's also, I believe, it's a title. You can, like, call yourself MP.
Like, most excellent.
Like, stylize yourself. Yeah. As MP.
Well, you are a member of the most excellent order of the British Empire. Then you can become an officer. Then you can become a commander, knight commander, and the Knight Grand Cross.
Ooh. Yeah.
Or Dame Grand Cross.
Wow. So this is actually five steps down from being knighted. Well, I guess it's three steps down from being knighted, but it's five steps down from like the ultimate honor.
Yeah, where you're called an actual sir.
Whatever. I mean, feudalism is a gigantic load of vulgar numbskullery.
Yeah.
Anyway,
how does England?
I love that.
How does England
the same
have
level
a queen?
As vulgar numbskulls?
Yes.
That's exactly how I imagine him talking.
You have a queen. Anyways. Vulgar numbskulls.
Oh, man. Let's see. Okay. Oh, here we go. Here we go. This was one that I thought was actually really funny just to think of it. Mm-hmm. 1989, the Elvis Presley Autoland Museum opened in Graceland. The museum contained over 30 cars which were owned by Presley, including his famous pink Cadillac, Harley-Davidson motorcycles, Stutz Black Hawk, a 1975 Dino Ferrari, and a 1956 Cadillac Eldorado convertible, and a red MG that Elvis drove in the film Blue Hawaii.
Oh, I would just like to own all those vehicles. That's a goal.
Honestly, a red MG?
Dude, I'll take them all.
Okay, well.
Honestly, like, I'm not really a gearhead. Yeah. You know, when I'm not like a supreme car guy, but if I were stupid rich, I would totally buy a bunch of cars.
Oh, yeah.
Just for the collection. Seriously, just for the collection. But, yeah, I would actually really like to go see this. I'd like to go see Graceland at least once.
I think the 56 Cadillac Eldorado is, like, on record is the largest passenger vehicle seating the fewest people ever.
That was a giant beast of a car.
Yeah. It's big and clunky. Get you some.
You could put, like, 6 bar stools in the engine compartment and just turn that sucker into a bus if you wanted.
I'm sure.
Do you want a big vehicle but have no friends? There you go.
Cadillac Eldorado convertible. All right. In 2012, Rush released their 20th album, Clockwork Angels.
Yes.
And it's not a slacker as far as Rush albums go.
Yeah.
It's so, pretty good.
Elaborate.
Was this their last album or is it the...
I think they have one more.
All right. So the one that they did before, like, Neil actually was just like, all right, I'm retiring.
Yeah.
So, until he decides to come back again.
Right, which might happen, who knows.
I think it'll happen.
Probably.
He's got tendonitis, though, in his arms.
Oh, he'll get rid of that.
There's a pill for that.
Just play a smaller drum kit, Neil, maybe.
That's right.
There's an idea. Novel idea.
He just needs like a year off, you know, of not playing. Like, but, to get back into it.
But nonetheless, though, in 2012, their 20th album from Rush.
Yes.
Quite the legacy going from those guys. Man, it's hard to believe that that's all coming to an end. It really is.
They produced albums like L. Ron Hubbard wrote books.
And I think some of their albums would probably parallel some of those books pretty well.
If you ask the Scientologists, they will tell you that... L. Ron Hubbard is the most published author in the world.
That's not true. Moses is, because he wrote the Torah.
I just like to point out that there's actually a bunch of other people who were published more than
probably. Hubbard. And I think a lot of the L. Ron Hubbard definitely like put his name on things that grad students wrote. He paid them like a nickel to write. Anyway,
you there, young child.
Hey, if you write this for me, I'll knock off a million years from your life sentence that I put you under.
Yeah, right? You won't have to live in the volcano.
Straight to the top. My right. Space Navy.
Let's move on to June 13th, 1958.
Oh, I enjoy this story as well.
Go ahead.
Frank Zappa graduates because, you know, we love to talk about high school graduations here. On Follow the Sound, Frank Zappa graduates from Antelope Valley High School in Lancaster, California. Also, alma mater, or excuse me.
Yes.
What is the word for
valedictorian?
Alumni?
Yeah. Alumni.
Oh.
Also an alumnus of Antelope Valley High School, Din Villette. You might know him better as Captain Beefheart.
Really?
Yes.
Captain Beefheart.
So weirdos came from Antelope Valley High School.
Just think, Frank Zappa can tell everybody that he went to high school with
Captain Beefheart. I think they were a few years apart.
I think
Zappa
Frank has to go around and, you know, Antelope Valley High School, Captain Beefheart went there too, you know.
Right.
That's how more famous people relate to less famous people.
No, you know what? That would be something Zappa would probably do, though. Yeah. You know?
Great. Well,
that's funny.
A big birthday, 1970, born on this day, Rivers Cuomo from Weezer.
Woo! Hey.
Yeah, 1995, they had the UK number 12 single, Buddy Holly, which, you know, Weezer. I don't know if you heard of that song. They had a few more hits besides that.
Yeah.
Over the years as well. But
we also did a review of theirs.
Mm-hmm. But we love Rivers Cuomo. We love Weezer. So happy birthday, Rivers.
Speaking of that, actually, Weezer, you know, of course, coming to St. Louis this summer for Lou Fest.
Yeah.
I'm totally going.
Are you now?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Have you seen the lineup for Lou Fest?
Yes, I have.
It's pretty amazing.
It is really good.
I mean, not only do you have Weezer, you've also got Snoop Dogg on there, which is pretty cool in and of itself. But you've also got Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats, which is great to see in concert, and Huey Lewis and the News.
See, that's the one.
I'm going seriously just so I can see Huey Lewis and the News.
Yeah.
I honestly will go just to see that.
And Weezer.
I've seen Weezer before, and so but I'm still looking forward to seeing them again. It's just that, like, man, that set or that list that they put together, I was like, oh, yes.
Oh, wait, and the News?
Yes, and the News.
Oh, then I'm in. Sorry.
Uh-huh.
It was originally just the News, and Huey Lewis couldn't make it, so. Just All kidding. Right. Just kidding.
I think we can move on from there. Go 1980, the movie we all know and love, Roadie, opens to a very cold reception. It features Meatloaf as a Texas truck driver turned roadie, but has some pretty decent performances from Roy Orbison, Blondie, and Alice Cooper. The tagline of this movie was, "Bands make it rock, but roadies make it roll."
Sweet. And true.
Also, Art Carney's in it.
Honestly, I've actually never seen it.
It's rough.
I just like how literal they were, too. Bands make it rock, but roadies make it roll, because the roadies have to push things and drive it.
For
to
a
the
second, when you said the movie Roadie, I was like, I don't remember Meatloaf being a truck driver in Roadhouse.
No.
Like, did he write the name wrong or something?
Nope. He was the guy with the scar.
Nope. Alice Cooper plays a rock star that's not Alice Cooper.
Oh.
But then
sings Alice Cooper.
But he's also in the show as Alice Cooper.
Weird.
Yeah, kind of like the Dylan movie where he's himself as Dylan and not Dylan in the same movie.
He like goes to see him as his own concert. Like Alice Cooper goes to an Alice Cooper show to watch Alice
but
Cooper.
But at least Alice Cooper, when he's Alice Cooper, has makeup on. So you're like, oh, okay, two different characters. I can deal with it. But you're also looking at him not with makeup going, is that also Alice Cooper?
Yeah.
And his acting is atrocious. It's really bad. I love Alice Cooper, but he's so bad in it.
You know, it's funny you say that about the makeup, because I swear I saw Alice Cooper at a mall in Peoria, Illinois.
Okay.
I swear I saw Alice Cooper, because he was playing Peoria that same night.
Okay.
And I saw a guy that I swore looked like Alice Cooper in a full head-to-toe, like, Adidas tracksuit.
Yeah.
And was walking with, like a supermodel, like, half his age-looking woman. And I thought, I was like, is that Alice Cooper shopping at the mall, like, before his show? But the thing was I... To this day, I'm not sure, because he didn't have any makeup on. And so I was like, I think I might have saw Alice Cooper in the food court, but I'll never know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is funny, because, I mean, he could play two completely different people in that aspect.
Yeah, I get
where you're coming from was the point of my story.
I always like that moment, though, when you see somebody who's famous, like just out and about somewhere, and you're like, wait, is that
you
actually
immediately
that
are full
person?
Of doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so it was really funny, because the only time I've had that happen, it's weird. I've had it happen a ton of times, but the only times that it has happened, it's always been for people who aren't really celebrities. They're like minor celebrities.
Yeah.
So like, I remember I was in Vegas and I saw this one guy, and I was like, wow, that looks like Joe from Sons of Guns, like. The Discovery Channel, like, TV show, which was about gun manufacturers in like, Louisiana. And I was like, that's really weird. And so it's like I had to look him up. But as he was walking by, I go, Joe? And he looks at me, and he's like, hey. And I go, I'm a big fan of yours. And he's like, thanks, blah, 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 and then, like, walked on.
Yeah.
But, like, every time, that's the way it's happened for me. I see somebody, and I was like, that looks a heck of a lot like so-and-so. Mm-hmm. And then I'll be like, Danny? And he's like, yeah. He's like, and that's how I met Danny Gokey from American Idol.
That's what you do. Just yell their name in public and see.
Well, I don't yell it. I ask them, like, you know, I'll get up close to them and be like, you know, are you so and so?
Burt Reynolds?
I almost did that.
Is that
actually,
you, Burt?
Which is really funny because we just had Uncorked happen here in St. Louis, and walking around was another American Idol alumnist, Constantine Morales.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, why in the world is Constantine Morales walking around here? He's like, I didn't think he was scheduled to play. It's like, am I missing something here? Hmm. But yeah, it was weird. I don't get it. Huh. So
very interesting. Well,
yeah, but I run into like the weird sort of minor celebrities that, you know, I never run into anybody big or famous.
I've never approached a celebrity that I've seen. Well, I mean,
I have zero fear in approaching people.
But
so,
like, my list of celebrities I've seen are like blues players or former blues players that were in Union Station eating lunch at the time.
Oh.
So it's like I'm not gonna go sit down next to Ron Sutter.
I can see that. I wouldn't
be like,
even
hey,
know,
can
man.
I eat a chili dog with you, bud? You know,
I honestly wouldn't know. I mean, I could have a blues player sit down next to me, and I wouldn't know who they were.
I recognize every single one that played from like 88 to like 2002 instantaneously. I don't know why.
Like, you're at an Applebee's. Gary Coleman? Are you Gary Coleman?
I did meet Dan, the lead singer of Imagine Dragons in Vegas. That was pretty cool. Weird.
We could
Let's go ahead and move on to 1988, mm-hmm. though. Speaking of running into people, the biggest charity rock concert since Live Aid 3 years earlier took place at London's Wembley Stadium to denounce South African apartheid. Among the performers were Sting, Stevie Wonder, Bryan Adams, George Michael, Whitney Houston, and Dire Straits. Half the money raised went towards anti-apartheid activities in Britain. The rest was donated to children's charities in Southern Africa. So that was good. It's a nice thing that they did.
It's a big concert.
Way better than some of the other stuff where they're like, we're going to feed all of Africa. No, you're not.
Yeah.
Africa's way bigger than what you can produce. So, but no, it's still cool. And then eventually after that, apartheid did end. And, you know, we had Nelson Mandela elected.
That's such a weird thing. Okay, because, like, this came off the back of, like, 4 or 5 years of people not necessarily getting blacklisted, but taking enough flack and taking careers or hits in their careers because South Africa was doing the thing. Why is that a thing that dictators do? Where they like try and fly in like really big name people to do a concert.
Because they want to feel important.
Yeah. Is that what it is?
That's purely what it is. It's like, hey, look what I can provide. You know, it's like, but these dictators, they just bring it in. So they feel it gives them a sense of legitimacy.
If you say so.
When what's his name? That one actor who's constantly bouncing. He goes and sees all the dictators down in South America and stuff. I forgot his name.
Well, I was going to say Dennis Rodman. But.
No, but he does that too. So
the actor Dennis Rodman, yes. For his brilliant portrayal of some guy.
Sean Penn.
Exactly like Dennis Rodman in the film Double Team.
Sean Penn like goes to all these places where there's like communist dictators.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, there's a really nice guy. It's like, yeah, his people are starving. Yay.
Yep. That's always the double-edged sword.
Remember this statement, people. This is outside of music. Communism has failed in every country that it has been applied in. So there you go.
He's not wrong.
I am not wrong. 1989. Who's taking it?
1989, that's the year I was born.
Yay!
And it's also the year that Jerry Lee Lewis gets a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, proving that sometimes people forget that you have done bad things.
Yeah.
Because that's not what's written.
That's not at all the notes that I wrote. Well, yeah.
Nonetheless, Jerry Lee Lewis, he got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, 1989.
Which doesn't make any sense to me, because I don't, like, who is going, yeah, Jerry Lee Lewis, loved him in
the Million Dollar Quartet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, okay, so he's famous for two things.
Marrying his bass player cousin's daughter.
And Million Dollar Quartet.
Right.
All right. Well, congratulations to Jerry Lee Lewis. And then in 1998,
Here we go. The Lightning Girl, Lily Self.
Selfon? Liza?
The Lightning Girl, Lily Selfon, along with 10 other people, are struck by lightning at the Tibetan Freedom Concert while Dave Matthews Band plays inside Robert F. Kennedy Stadium.
10 people struck by lightning?
Yes.
At a Tibetan Freedom Concert.
Wait. So it was a Tibetan Freedom Concert?
Yes. First of 2 days.
In America, right?
Yes.
Okay.
At Robert F. Kennedy Stadium.
Weird.
They were inside. Lightning. There was a big lightning storm going on. Not a whole lot of rain. Whole lot of thunder. And it struck the building a couple of times. Knocked out the Jumbotron. And then hit 10 people. One of which was Liza. Jiminy Christmas, the Lightning Girl.
That's what I'm saying, Liza.
Yeah. And there was a little bit of a media event over it because she like owned her own record store. And all the bands sent her cards, and a lot of them came to visit her. And then she sent thank you cards to everyone that sent cards, signed the Lightning Girl, and then put on a benefit for a local hospital's burn ward.
Yeah.
And did a couple of concerts for a few years to raise money for them.
Cool.
Yeah, really cool deal. And somebody,
nice.
I don't remember who it was, somebody came down and signed albums at her record store. And then they donated everything that they collected, the proceeds, for charity as well.
Mm.
But anyway, that was in 1998.
Moving on to June 14th.
I love this.
Yeah, this is all you, because I don't know what you're going to say.
You have no idea.
None.
1909, Burl Ives is born in Jasper County, Illinois.
Woo!
You familiar with Burl Ives, right?
I am not.
Are you familiar with the evil mustache guy from the stop-motion animation Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer TV special?
Yes, I am.
That is Burl Ives.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And he was also a Broadway guy. Actually, a really kind of stellar actor who a lot of people were surprised to see in a children's TV special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Also had some recording history as well.
Huh.
Not real huge, but had like a couple albums, and they weren't like Leonard Nimoy actor albums.
Yeah. Interesting.
So there you go, Burl Ives. We still remember you here.
Moving on up to 1961, Patsy Cline was seriously injured in a car accident. During her 2-month hospital stay, her song, I Fall to Pieces, gave the singer her first country number one and also became a huge country pop crossover hit.
I fall to pieces.
I fall to pieces.
Hmm.
Yeah. I always liked Patsy Cline. Patsy Cline was a fantastic lady.
What about Creepy Stalkers? You like Creepy Stalkers?
I adore Creepy Stalkers.
I've always loved Creepy
Stalkers. Well, good.
I love the fact that we don't have stalkers, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, never mind.
Nobody knows what we look like.
Hey. Well, in 1964, how would you like it if a 12-year-old girl mailed herself to you? Be kind of weird, wouldn't it? Be kind of illegal, wouldn't it? Well, 12-year-old Carol Dryden attempts to mail herself to the Beatles, but is discovered by London railway workers. The crate that she was in was marked presents for the Beatles. Her trip lasted 10 minutes. But yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't try to arrest the Beatles, you know, for transporting a minor across.
Well, I think you'd have to go with like the what would it be? The like British Postal Service, because they didn't mail her.
You know what would have been really funny is if, yes, like they tried to open her, like, oh, open up the box. And then she's like, I am the property of the Queen. Like, how dare you? Since all post technically is the property of the Queen.
Yeah.
I do like, too, that it was marked presents for the Beatles. Like, a big case comes up like, oh, presents. And then it's just her. Ta-da. I'm 12.
Yeah.
There's got to be successful times of somebody mailing themselves.
Return to sender.
Mm-hmm. But I guess Carol Dryden was just a little too fidgety as a 12-year-old to pull it off.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be a little weird, especially like, you know, if you pick up a box or something and it's like, wow, this weighs about as much as a 12-year-old girl. Like, and then you shake it and it's like some person rattling around inside.
I imagine it'd be like shaking a porta potty or something, like, get it out, I'm gonna cut it out.
Nice.
Stop it.
Man, moving on up to 1970.
Mm-hmm.
The closer to home Billboard revealed.
Woo!
And Grand Funk spent $100,000 to take up a full city block in New York over Ripley's Wax Museum.
Mm-hmm. I love Grand Funk Railroad.
Do you know?
They took up a full city block?
Yeah, the entire Ripley's Wax Museum's storefront.
Like they just put up a big billboard over the whole front of it? Was that it?
Yeah. Well, they had turned the top of Ripley's Wax Museum into a billboard. Usually it had more than one, like 16 or so.
Okay.
But this one took up the entire building.
So they just bought out the whole thing.
Yes.
Wow. That's cool, though.
Yeah, I think it took them like a week to put it all up, too. There were like stories. What's coming?
That's got to be a good photo.
It is.
For the website, too.
It's not bad. You can find it on Google.
I think that's cool. That was like a big-time publicity stunt back then, too.
Yeah.
To do something like that for the Ripley's Wax Museum in New York. Nice.
I don't think that building's there anymore. I'm pretty sure it's been torn down. And, like, a bigger high-rise is put up.
See, I don't know. Brian's kind of the New York City expert out of the three,
am
I think. I think you've been
to
New York.
I've been there once.
Well, I've never been to New York City.
For, like, 3 days.
So you must have missed the Ripley's Wax Museum.
I remember. Well, I know where it is, but I mean, it's not too far from, the city center, so...
Like Times Square
Times Square,
that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I always get Times Square mixed up with Madison Square Garden for some reason, because Square, Madison Square,
yeah,
and so
yeah.
It's like... And my brain just doesn't...
Has room for one square.
Yeah, one square. But...
I've always picked you as a one square brain kind of guy.
You know what's funny is that, like, I had to go back afterwards after we got back home and actually look at maps of New York to really find out what direction I was going, because I had no clue most of the time.
Yeah, right? When you just go back and you're like, oh, that's where I was.
Like, oh, I was walking north. I thought for sure I was heading, like, southwest. Mm-hmm. That sucks.
Yeah.
It's the only city I've ever been in that really threw me off. Like, when I went to London, I knew what direction I was going. When I went to Paris, I knew what direction I was going.
Yeah.
I go to New York, I have no freaking clue.
You know, it's funny you say that. I won't make this long, but it is weird because there's, like, a town in Illinois that I'd always go to, and it would always throw me off because... When you think of a town like, let's just say St. Louis, you know, north, south, east, west.
Yeah.
You know, north side, south side, west side, and then the east side is kind of Illinois. But, like, this town was built that, like, the main road runs from southwest to northeast, and all the crossroads are running from, like, southeast to northwest. And so you'd be on a road, you'd be driving, and you'd think you're going north, and you're going northwest or northeast. And if you turn left, you're thinking, oh, okay, if I turn left here, I'm going to go west. No, you're going northwest. And the whole town was basically built crooked, and it drove me nuts. And so that's the only reason I even brought it up.
There you go.
But Broadway and Gravoy, both Broadway in New York, Gravoy here in St. Louis, both of them are like that, where you feel like you're going north, but you're not. You're going northeast.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. I mean, the city is kind of, it's slightly tilted, so.
Mm-hmm.
But, it is what it is.
So, for 1990, do you want me to do this real dirty one for you?
Go for it, Craig.
All right.
I love dirty words.
It's dirty because Two Live Crew, they played the Ozone Club in Atlanta, Georgia, 4 days after their arrests in Hollywood, Florida, for being obscene. Police in Atlanta warned Two Live Crew not to perform face down, ass up, but the crew threw a wrench in the works when they appealed to the audience of 500 to, quote, help us get our message out. And the Atlanta police were treated to a 500-plus red-blooded Americans singing the words, face down, ass up.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way we like to fornicate. It's all resulted in the album, As Nasty As They Want to Be, going double platinum, and the follow-up album, Banned in the USA, getting the first parental advisory sticker. Wasn't that courtesy of Tipper Gore?
Yes, yeah. It was.
Mm-hmm. Mostly because of the censorship, which was in place before the album was even submitted. Bruce Springsteen gave his blessing.
Yeah. Because Banned in the USA is just a remix of Born in the USA.
Hey, good call. But yeah, nonetheless, though, it's just funny. It just goes to show that whenever the police try and shut you down, that's usually good publicity.
Oh, absolutely. They took that one and made bank with it.
Bank.
Because there was Two Live Crew, like, as much as people still like to talk about them, never had the album sales that they did for Nasty As They Want to Be.
Oh, yeah.
Like every other album from that fell flat.
I remember that. That's the famous album too, because it just has like their
the
heads
booties.
Between the girl, yeah. girls' booties. Yeah,
booties on the beach.
I think that's probably the most cliche like rap album cover of its time. You know what I mean?
It's
just they're on the beach and it's just four butts and then their heads like underneath their their legs and. It was just like, okay, this is a rap album.
That album was out for a couple of years before like they got like a major label to kind of back them.
Mm.
You know, because like, what was the first? Was Suge Knight the first like rap specialist as a? I think they were. Anyhow,
it's getting a little too early for me there. Yeah.
Yeah, well, anyway, the point is that that album was never designed to be sold at Target, right? So I don't think a whole lot of thought was even put into, like, what is this going to mean for our brand if we put, like, four booties over our heads at the beach?
It means we're some cool dudes. Well, congratulations to 2 Live Crew for finding some success there.
There you go.
And for having a bunch of fans to stick up for them up against the police. The Atlanta police, I wouldn't want to mess with them personally. But especially not in 1990.
Probably not, yeah.
But something on a little bit more of a somber note. I think
1994, composer Henry Mancini died at the age of 70. He wrote the music to Moon River, which is a classic song. And it was originally sung in the movie Breakfast at Tiffany's by Audrey Hepburn. Was also the theme song for the Andy Williams television show, and he had the 1969 U.S. number one single with the love theme from Romeo and Juliet, which I remember in school, we had to watch that movie.
Yes.
And because we were in a Christian school, they fast-forwarded past the 4 seconds of brief nudity that was in there. He recorded over 90 albums and contributed music to over 100 different movies, including the theme from The Pink Panther.
I actually got to see the boobies in school.
Oh, did you now?
Yes, because our drama teacher didn't realize how light works and just turned the cart with the television around, and we just watched the reflection in the windows.
I remember senior year of high school, they showed us The Merchant of Venice, and there's like a lot of boobs in that one, too. And our teacher was like, before she even showed the movie, she said, I'm not going to mess with the movie at all. You're all seniors in high school. If you're not 18, you're going to be 18. Here you go. Here's the movie. And I was just like, dang, this is hot. Dang, Beavis. This is a good movie.
Oh, God. Yo, Beavis and Butthead is so unwatchable now. I can't go back and watch more than like 14 seconds of it. It's just that bad.
Oh, my gosh, you guys.
What?
Did you realize that on this day in 1997, Puff Daddy and Faith Evans started an 11-week run at number one on the U.S. singles chart with I'll Be Missing You?
What?
11 weeks. It was a tribute, of course, to the late Notorious B.I.G., also hit number one in the U.K., but you guys, Puff Daddy and Faith Evans.
Whatever. I have not heard Faith Evans' name since 1997.
I know, right? Can she do anything without Puff Daddy?
I don't know.
No, I don't know.
Probably not.
Hmm.
That was mean. I mean, I'm sure.
No, but I mean, it is hard to come back from an 11-week run at number one. With a huge rap star as your co-partner on the song.
That song was so huge, it made it onto like compilations for grocery stores.
Yeah, and it's weird. Like, you know, it's weird, and it's probably blasphemous to say this, but like, it's not really even a good song. Like, the chorus is good.
Yeah.
I'll be missing you. But like, Puff Daddy's part, I realize it's a tribute to B.I.G., so not knocking the dude. I'm just saying, though, that like, it's pretty mellow. It's pretty lame, for a number one song. Don't skewer me. I'm sorry I said that.
Oh well.
Yeah. Oh well. Let's move on to the next day.
Yes. Here we go. June 15th. We got a birthday to start this one off. On this day in 1941, Harry Nielsen is born in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
Nice. I thought.
Do you know who lives in Bushwick, Brooklyn?
Oscar the Grouch.
Brian Croc.
Ah, the other Brian
Croc. Oh, yes. Wow. Fun fact.
There you go. That's all. Continue.
I know that you're... Well, this next one I know is all you, Brian.
1967, Peter Green leaves Blue Breakers to form Fleetwood Mac.
Yes.
Boom.
There you go.
So...
The who?
Here's...
Who did he leave?
Okay, so here's the deal. The Blues Breakers.
Uh-huh.
All right. So he...
You know who the Blues Breakers are?
They are the Blue... They break to form Fleetwood Mac?
Yeah, that's what I
thought. Which is funny because Fleetwood Mac was totally a blues band like back then too. But it's kind of funny because you think about it, like he didn't really like form Fleetwood Mac so much as Mick Fleetwood and John McVie were like, hey, we're starting a band. You know, you want to come with us? Yeah, sure, why not? So that's how like it was formed because of that. But yeah, it was just, it wasn't like he was like, yeah, I need you and I need you. What are your last names? All right, Fleetwood Mac, here we go.
That's how I like to picture it. I got this idea.
Yeah, I'm going to use people's names. It's going to be great. It's going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm. It's Dorsey McDonald. No, it's Green Boot. No, Fleetwood. There you go.
All right. But moving on, a couple years later, we got...
Here we go. 1969, Ice Cube is born O'Shea Jackson in Los Angeles, California.
In the city of angels.
O'Shea Jackson.
He would go on to create the famous quote of him getting fired on his day off, as well as the great movie, Are We There Yet?
Also...
Because that's what I think when I think of Ice Cube.
When I think of Ice Cube.
Here's the funny thing, too.
Yeah.
Is that O'Shea Jackson...
Pretty damn good name for a rapper.
Went on to create O'Shea Jackson Jr., who would then go on to portray O'Shea Jackson as Ice Cube.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Ice Cube, good dude. Of course, for those of you who don't know, NWA.
Yes.
He was one of the founding members.
Oh, yeah.
He went
for a second. I thought you were actually going to say what NWA meant, and then I would have had to slap you.
I don't need to say it. It's NWA. He went on to go solo as Ice Cube. He got into a awesome acting career as well, and man, he has come a long way. It's weird. I literally just saw him on like The View the other day. I'm serious. And they were asking him about his acting career, but then every once in a while they'd be like, so let's talk about you rapping. And it's just, you can tell Ice Cube, he is. He's like, I love where I'm at now. I don't regret anything I've done, but it's also really weird to sit here and go back and forth from, here's my new movie out. It's a, it's rated
PG.
Here's what
I did 30 years ago.
Yeah. And then now we're going to talk about the fact that, yes, I was in a gang and did own guns, you know, and like grew up in Los Angeles as a gangbanger.
Yeah, it's also insane to think, okay, that the guy who, the character from Straight Outta Compton has been on Fox News like 70 times.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah?
What do you mean?
Yeah, like, they bring him on Fox News all the time to talk about stuff.
Hmm.
Like he's all. It seems like every like third or fourth time I see Fox News, which is like every year. Like that's about how many times I actually watched Fox News.
And it just always happens to be.
It's always like, oh man, or see like a clip roll around on YouTube, on Facebook, or something. It's like it's always Ice Cube on Fox News, talking to whoever or counterpointing whatever.
Interesting. Interesting.
Sometimes it's censorship. Sometimes it's like. Second Amendment stuff, and then like every once in a while he'll be there to like talk about like the children are okay. Like that's it.
Well, anyways, last thing I can say about Ice Cube is that he's great, and he came up with the classic "Today Was a Good Day," and that's that about sums it up. didn't have to use my AK. Gotta say it was a good day.
There you go.
You know it was another great day.
1989, Nirvana's debut album Bleach was released in the U.S.
Yes.
The title for the album came from a poster, Bleach Your Works, urging drug users to bleach their needles. Kurt Cobain claimed that most of the lyrics on the album were written the night before recording while he was feeling pissed off and that he did not regard them highly.
Mm.
But then again, I don't think he really regarded anything that highly.
Yep. Who knows?
He strikes me as the type of person who would write a song, it'd be awesome, and then he'd be like, it sucks.
Yeah. That's kind of
where's my shotgun?
How it goes, though. Come as you are, soaked in
terrible.
Bleach.
Terrible. Mm. But also on this day, another album was released, one that nobody noticed, The Offspring's The Offspring, which was reissued and reprinted in 1995 when it actually got sales and hit the radio.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Weird story. That album was out for 6 years whenever you started hearing it.
Wow.
Well, see, that's what I always like those bands that like released an album a long time before it actually makes it big.
Yeah.
Like the Violent Femmes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Violent Femmes released like their song, which became like a 90s alternative rock anthem, despite the fact that it was released in like the early 80s.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like it was like 10-year gap before when they released it to when it actually like started getting massive radio play.
Well, and you know, right now in the last couple of years, too, with the whole, as you would call, hipster movement, that's what they've all been about. I mean, one of the best examples, the prime example of that, is that most hipsters are familiar of the band Neutral Milk Hotel, which is exactly one of those, Brian, where they released an album decades ago. Nobody heard of it. It got nothing. The band like broke up and went away for at least 20 years. And then, because it even happened to me personally, my buddy was like, oh my gosh, have you heard this album? It's so good. And I'm listening to it. And at first it's weird. And then I learned to love it, and now even I like know this whole album, and the band has like reunited after 20 years because people are like enjoying their album so much, and they never had any success, and now they're relevant again 20 years later, and it's just crazy. So it's funny, and I love The Offspring. I grew up listening to The Offspring too. I love their album Americana. But it's weird. I didn't realize that their self-titled came.
Yeah, they're self-titled when it was first released. It wasn't even released on vinyl. It was just cassette.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, and then 6 years later, I think they had one single off their second album, and then their debut album outsold their second album on their second album's release.
Wild.
Interesting. Yeah. Very interesting.
That is really kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's a really quirky little thing there.
Another quirky little thing. In 1991, Paula Abdul started a 5-week run at number one on the U.S. singles chart with Rush, Rush.
Baby, give me.
Her fifth U.S. number one and number six hit in the U.K.
So which part is the quirky little thing? Is it just Paula Abdul in general?
Paula Abdul, yeah.
She's a quirky little thing?
She a quirky little thing.
Well, she did dance with a cartoon
The
cat.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. MC Cool Cat? MC Scat Cat? MC something like that, right?
Speaking of that, I know earlier we were talking about randomly running into celebrities and stuff when I talked about Constantine Morales. Apparently Constantine Morales and Paula Abdul had a little thing-a-thing back during the American Idol days.
Hmm. Quirky little thing.
Yep. Told you. She's a quirky little thing. And that's all I got for her. So, moving on.
Yeah, 1999. Great album. From Santana, they released Supernatural. It hits number one for a 12-week run. And there's an old episode we did. We went on and on about this album. But real quick, though, you know it had a bunch of hits off it.
Oh, yeah.
With Rob Thomas, Smooth. That was the huge one. They had a little bit of
greatest
this.
Greatest song of all time. Still winning record of the year. Yep. Every year at the Grammy Awards.
That one had Maria on it.
Maria.
Oh, yeah. So, great album. Probably one of Santana's bigger known albums, even though this was like the second coming of Santana, you know?
Yeah, I don't think that they ever cracked, like, got anywhere near, like, to a top 10, though, in the 70s.
No, like, I mean, they had, like the Oy Vey, Como Va, you know, and, like, Black Magic Woman and stuff like that.
They might have had single sales, but I don't think they had an LP sale.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, you're probably right, because this was probably their biggest album as a whole.
Yeah.
Do you know what I remember about Santana? Said he played at Woodstock while high on acid.
Yes.
And he said that the neck of his guitar turned into a dragon.
A dragon, really?
Yeah.
I thought it was a snake.
No, a dragon.
Okay.
And he thought it was awesome.
And he was totally into it. But we got to get into June 16th, because this day is huge.
Yes.
There are so many good stories on this
day. So, June 16th, we flew through the 15th there, so. But June 16th, starting out in 1967, one of my all-time favorite events in music history.
Yes.
The 3-day Monterey Pop Festival in California began. All the proceeds went to charity when all the artists agreed to perform for free. And the Summer of Love was officially born. The festival saw the first major U.S. appearances of The Who, Jimi Hendrix, and Janis Joplin. Also on the bill were The Byrds.
Never heard of them.
Grateful Dead.
Who?
Otis Redding.
The Who?
Simon and Garfunkel. Steve Miller Band. Canned Heat. The Mamas and the Papas, actually after they'd broken up. Jefferson Airplane, Buffalo Springfield, and the Electric Flag. And then John Phillips of the Mamas and Papas wrote San Francisco, or be sure to wear your flowers in your hair, to promote the festival, and which later became a massive hit for them.
Oh, you know what? No if wonder that song is so campy. I didn't know that was written
Francisco.
For the festival. I thought it was just like this campy little thing that happened.
No. So I've been to Monterey.
Yes.
And I didn't get a chance to go to the fairgrounds, which is where it was actually held at. But I would love to actually go see where it was. So this is honestly my favorite like festival
yes.
movie out there. I've seen the Woodstock one, but the Monterey Pop one, all the performances were just so amazing. Even with like the Who getting out there to destroy stuff, Hendrix going out right afterwards and setting his guitar on fire, all the way down to Ravi Shankar closing out the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at like the pictures and there's, you know, like famous people just sitting in the crowd watching these other artists perform. Like I said, this was the first major U.S. appearance for Janis Joplin. So there's video, there's footage of Mama Cass sitting there, front row, dead center. Everybody's watching Janis Joplin perform. And she finishes like the first song. And Janis turns to Mickey Dolenz of the Monkees and is like, oh my God. Because she just witnessed like one of the greatest things that she'd ever seen in her life. And that was Janis Joplin going up on stage and tearing it up.
Oh, you mean Mama Cass talking Mama Cass. To Mickey Dolenz.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Okay.
And like, just, you got that. You've got all of these folk people who are then all of a sudden seeing The Who and Jimi Hendrix and just being like, what in the world is happening and how are we not a part of this already? I mean, seriously, it had some of the greatest things. And then you've got all these great like 60s rock groups in there, and you throw Otis Redding into the mix.
Yeah.
Otis Redding gets up there and shows them, look, I'm a performer, I am a showman, and I know exactly what I'm doing. And he killed it. There was not a person on that stage that could hold a candle to his showmanship when he was up there performing. And it was amazing. It's like even when he got to this like really great part where the band like does these three hits and it's supposed to happen and then he's supposed to continue on with I've Been Loving You Too Long.
Yeah.
So it's like he goes, you know, he yells, they do the three hits and he goes, whoa, 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 one more time. And then it's like, boom, boom, boom. And like every time he's like just like shaking his head and then he's like, no, 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 one more time. It's like, and it just keeps going until finally it's like he drops it and he goes right back into singing real low for I've Been Loving You Too. It was absolutely brilliant. Like, seriously, hands down, my favorite concert movie that I've ever seen. Monterey Pop Festival.
There you go.
Also, I mean, Monterey is just a gorgeous city in and of itself. So
I like their cheese.
Don't go swimming in the bay, though, because there are sharks.
Oh, I thought you were going to say pollution.
Tiger sharks.
I was going to say, because you end up...
great whites.
Because you go swimming with the fishes. See?
No, it's not pollution, actually. I mean, the city's really nice. I mean, the city is really clean, and at least that's what I noticed. But I so wish that I could have gone to the fairgrounds to actually see where it was. So, but that's all I got. I could go on and on and on about the Monterey Pop Festival.
It's gotta
be, and I want to do a proper review of this. Actually, I want to do like clips of the songs do a legit review.
You almost feel like you should go to the field, and like you should just hear like the ghosts of the festival's past, you know, or something.
I honestly think that they should show that movie on those grounds, like, every year.
That'd be a cool idea, too. I would be interested in that.
The movie's only 2 hours long or something. Yeah. I mean, it's not like it's a super long thing. But I've just got like the like initial like movie that they kind of made for it. I don't have like all the supplemental materials that they also released, because that thing cost, at the time, it cost like $100. So, and I was like, oh, this costs like $15. I'm going to buy this instead. Woodstock's the same way. You can buy like a big giant deluxe version of all the Woodstock stuff, or you can buy like just the Woodstock movie. But, and that's the thing that a lot of people, they think like Woodstock was the first super big festival that happened in the 60s. Like Woodstock was the standard that set everything. No, it was Monterey Pop Festival.
But they were on different, complete opposite sides of the country.
True. But it was one of those things where the Monterey Pop Festival like was done 2 years before that and really set the standard. And everybody was so like super cool and everybody was really chill. It's like out at the Monterey Pop Festival. And then it's like, then they decided to do Woodstock in the middle of nowhere. It's like, and basically had to try and figure out how to feed and give water to people over 3 days.
Jacob, I like this next one here.
Yes.
I like how you added the note, somehow it happened. What am I talking about here? How did this possibly happen?
Yes. We're talking about, well, I mean, 2 years after the Monterey Pop Festival, Captain Beefheart released their debut album, Trout Mask Replica. And somehow, despite itself, it hit number 21 in the UK. Did not chart in the US.
Captain Beefheart didn't chart in 69?
No, it did not. Didn't chart in 69, wouldn't chart today, and nowhere in between. I love Captain Beefheart. I really do. He's like a more drug-cultured Tom Waits. I love it. I love everything to do with the band Captain Beefheart.
Do you know what exactly Captain Beefheart is supposed to be?
I have no clue.
Okay. Just wondering.
Okay, that was the name of the band, and then it became his stage persona because everyone assumed, the only thing we could possibly understand is that has to be Captain Beefheart.
Just like how Darius Rucker just has to be Hootie. From Hootie and the Blowfish.
Exactly. I mean, I love that you don't question the name of the album, Trout Mask Replica.
Well, you know, I just figured that there was a trout mask and somebody made a replica.
Who knows? It doesn't matter. The point is that his music is bizarre enough to be interesting, yet listenable enough that it's not Sun Ra.
Well, how about this one? Our next one, one of the few artists to be named who has been turned into a holograph.
Yes.
That's right. In 1971, Tupac Shakur is born in Parrish Crooks. He is born, his real name, Parrish Crooks, in New York, New York. So, Tupac, what up? Pour some out for you.
You know what? MC Parrish Crooks.
What are you talking about? Tupac's still alive.
Oh, that's right. Tupac is still alive.
Everybody knows this.
He was not killed in Las Vegas in 94. No.
He was not. No.
No.
Nope.
Mm-mm. 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 Nope. But nonetheless, happy birthday to Tupac Shakur, a.k.a. Parrish Crooks of New York, New York.
Mm-hmm. Pac for life. We got another album release, Brian.
What you got?
The huge album release. 1972. Maybe you've heard of it. The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars.
Yeah.
Enough said.
Hmm.
Ziggy Stardust. Bam. Bam. Ziggy played.
That's pretty good.
Oh, I do what I can.
I mean, it's kind of hard for most people to name like a Bowie song that's not on that album.
That is true.
Like, if you're not, like, a huge Bowie fan, you're probably going to say stuff that's from the Ziggy Stardust album.
Fame.
That's what I would do.
Fame. Mm-hmm. What about Ground Control to Major Tom? No.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah, there you
all
go.
All right, then.
It's a crash course.
I mean, I know of other songs. I just can't name, like, I can't name them off the top of my head. So, I'm sorry. I'm not like a Bowie super fan. Yeah, I respect him a lot, But at the same time, like, I've never really, like, gone through his albums, you know, and I need to. I need to do that.
Yeah, somebody's yelling at their radio right now being like, how can you forget about this song?
Probably your girlfriend.
And so. I think our point is proven is that on layman's
terms. She's like our one listener, apparently.
Yeah. she was supposed to come tonight.
She's the listener. She's the listener that we have the most interaction with.
That's true.
Well, that's because she's the one listener who actually comes back to us and is like, you were close on this one, but you forgot about this album.
Exactly.
And that was actually of 73, but it was originally released in 72. So
I'll tell you what she's not going to have shit on me for. And that's 1980, the Blues Brothers film debuts in Chicago, Illinois, because where else would you premiere that film?
Sweet Home Chicago.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, it is one of my all-time favorite movies.
Where do we even start to talk about this?
How can you really?
At the beginning.
We honestly just need to do a full-on review of it, too.
Yeah,
so.
That's true.
And just be done with it. So
let's try and go in order of their appearance of superstars. Okay, so James Brown.
Well, Cab Calloway on before that.
Okay, Cab Calloway. James Brown.
James Brown.
Then we go to the street scene.
Yeah.
John Lee Hooker. Right. And then Ray Charles.
Yeah. Well, no. It goes John Lee Hooker. Then it goes
to
Aretha.
Aretha Franklin. Sorry.
Then they get the rest of the band. Then they go to Ray Charles.
Yes.
I'm trying to think who else is after that.
After that is the Country Bar.
Yeah, where do they go to the Country Bar?
This is the Country Bar.
And then them just running around doing some other stuff, promoting the show.
Mm-hmm.
Then they do the show.
Yeah, so there you go.
Boom.
I mean, I guess as far as like music performances.
That Ray Charles one, though?
Yes.
That was like the first time that I
Land of a Thousand Dances? Day of a Thousand Dances? What?
I thought it was Shake Your Tail Feathers.
Is that the name of it?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it
Shake Your Tail Feather. Come Bend on, over, let me see you shake your tail feathers. Come on, let me see you shake your tail feathers. Oh, no, 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 no.
Shake it.
Twisting.
Shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it, baby.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow.
Here's
That's
what
some
I,
good stuff.
Yeah. Oh, what a film.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's one.
Yes.
It is a superb comedy.
Yes, it is.
Even if it wasn't a musical, it is a superb comedy.
Yes, it is.
It is a superb musical, too.
I swear, baby, I tried to get there. There were flaws. Locus! I swear to God.
It wasn't my fault.
So here's our bonus trivia question.
Our boning?
Boning trivia question.
Yes.
Do you guys remember how the movie starts, the very first thing you see?
Mm-hmm. It's Jake getting out of Joliet.
That's right.
I believe the first shot is his hands on the bars.
Sweet.
I'm right.
With the tattoo on the
Was
Jake
it,
doesn't it says Jake, I thought.
Well, yeah, because they have Jake and L Wood.
Yeah. and his is on both hands.
Yes.
When he's got his hands on the steering
yeah,
wheel.
Yeah.
He's L got Wood. The two that says L and then the other one says Wood. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, good call. I just had to test you there.
Just get out of prison and my brother picks me up in a police car.
Okay.
Where's the Bluesmobile? I traded it for a microphone. I can understand that.
So we are almost
Fix the lighter.
Almost at the end of this week's this day in music history.
Mm-hmm.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Everyone hates Illinois Nazis.
For this one, this is a good one that kind of follows up well to an earlier one we had.
Mm-hmm.
In 1996, get this. Rage Against the Machine.
Boom.
Beastie Boys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Smashing Pumpkins.
Uh-huh. At the time, boom.
The Fugees.
Yeah.
Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Smoking.
John Lee Hooker.
What?
Oh, yes.
Beck.
Uh-huh.
Sonic Youth.
Yep.
Yoko Ono.
Okay, one miss.
De La Soul.
Uh-huh.
And Richie Havens.
My man.
Ooh, all appeared at the two-day Tibetan Freedom Concert at Golden Gate Park in San Francisco. A sellout crowd of over 100,000 people made it the largest U.S. benefit concert since Live Aid in 1985. What a lineup! 96? Oh, I would go see that exact same show to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would have been.
Yeah, it would.
That would have been a brilliant show to see.
And for a great cause, too.
That is true.
Of course, we mentioned Live Aid in 1985 earlier, so. Yeah, basically same concept, just coming back together to to make sure that, you know, because the Tibetan freedom problem is it's still going on to this day. It's 2017. So.
Yep.
But not surprised that Rage Against the Machine is the very first name on there, too, for something like that. Because they're very politically active. So, of course, you know, like Beck and Smashing Pumpkins kind of fall in that area, too, sometimes, though. You know,
Beck kind of, he doesn't really do anything right now, though. I mean, he kind of stays out of it.
Well, yeah, but back in the day, I kind of would compare him as someone who kind of...
I could see that, yeah.
He was outspoken, but yet he kind of did it in his own weird way.
Yeah, and I know the Beastie Boys, they were, you know, they were pretty big into some of the political stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, it would have been a brilliant concert to go see. And that's just like the main ones. I'm sure that there were even more people there that...
Oh, yeah, like, two-day festival.
Oh, yeah.
Would have been great just to see that, you know, because it would have been like, who knows how many other great bands were there that, you know, hadn't really like made it big or anything at that point, but were just playing because they could. So
supporting the cause.
Fascinating.
We got one more.
One more. 2010. Here we go. Metallica.
Boom.
Megadeth.
Oh.
Slayer.
Yeah.
And Anthrax.
What?
All play on the same bill in Warsaw, Poland. The first of 8 shows. In 2011, they then do 7 shows in the U.S.
Another.
That is one killer tour.
Killer lineup.
Yes.
I think it's
all
awesome.
Considering they're... Okay, so there's kind of like a joke in like the metal like heads crowd that you can't have a metal festival that doesn't include one of those four bands headlining.
Mm-hmm.
So to have all four of them, like the big four of metal, because believe it or not, Slayer still plays arenas in like Switzerland.
Oh yeah, they love death metal in Europe. Oh yeah,
they you know, you know
they
what
get
I loved
heavier
is,
than that.
Just last weekend, you know, of course, Metallica played here in St. Louis.
Yes.
And I was watching their thank you video to St. Louis, which was really cool, actually. They went through and they filmed a bunch of stuff in and around St. Louis.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, you know, had, like, a really cool, like instrumental version of And Nothing Else Matters.
Okay.
And like, just really, really sort of cool, the thing that they did. But they showed a bunch of the people who were there at the show. And I was watching it, and all these people were like, yeah, and throwing up the horns and whatnot. And then it pans past this one dude. It's all like, Metallica, Metallica, Metallica. Next dude up there, Slayer.
Yep.
And I was like, ha-ha! That's funny.
Yeah, standing outside of Busch Stadium when I was watching people leaving. And a lot of Slayer shirts coming from the Metallica concert.
That's nice.
You know?
Weirdly enough, actually, also in that video, the host of Next Gen Nerds, one of the hosts of Next Gen Nerds, a guy named Todd, his wife is actually in the video because she got VIP tickets and actually got to like meet the band and stuff. So
that's cool. Way to go, Metallica.
So yeah, I was that alone, just making that video actually gave me so much more appreciation for the band than like anything else that they could have done. So
wow. Well, Metallica, Megadeth, Slayer, and Anthrax all on the same bill. And in Warsaw, Poland,
yes.
I just got to say that's a pretty badass town to play a metal show in, too.
Yeah, you got to bring your A game when you're playing in the Poles, man.
Yeah.
They're not going to put up with none of that, like, half-assing it shit.
I feel like they'd go crazy. I feel like they'd go nuts and like that would be, oh, my gosh. I would love to fly to another country just to hear, just to see a huge show that... would be going down there, because the people there that would just be like, this is the one time I ever get to see the greatest band on earth. I'm going to go nuts.
I've always wanted to see like some bands that are like from other countries in front of their home crowd.
That'd be cool, too. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, let's see. I'm a huge fan of the Frames from Ireland. They're all from like Dublin. And I've always wanted to go see the Frames play in front of a Dublin crowd, because that would just be... flat out amazing.
That makes me think of like seeing like the Dropkick Murphys in Boston or something. Ooh, like, can you imagine that? Can you imagine how rowdy that would be? Like, well, we're back in Boston. This one's called Coming Home to Boston. You know, it's, you know, I'm just,
you know what I really liked, and I've mentioned them before, but 21 Pilots, they're from Columbus, Ohio. So they did on their last tour, they did a show in Columbus, Ohio. And what they did is that instead of just having one show, you know, in like the one location, they played 3 different shows in 3 different locations, Like, one was, like, you know, like a really small joint. The next one would have been, like, the equivalent of the pageant. And then the next one was the arena, you know, that they'd sold out. And I was like, man, that would have been so cool to see them, like, in this tiny little place.
Yeah, that's
cool. The reason why they picked those three places is because, like, one of them was, like, the first place they ever played or something, mm-hmm. something like that. The second one was the first time that they'd ever had, like, a sold-out show, and they had no clue that it was going to possibly sell out. So they were just, like, super psyched about that. And then of course, the arena, which they never thought they would ever play anyway.
Yeah.
And so I was like, that's super cool. But I'd love to see them in front of their home crowd just to see how that goes.
That's exactly how I would do it if I was in a big-name band. Is if we played that hometown show, I would. I would be like, we got to play the venue that we played before we were big. Like, we got to play just as a favor, you know, just to come back and be like, you're going to sell out this show and have great ticket sales, but also this is our homecoming. Like, I would totally do that. And I'd want to play, like, every local venue in town.
Yeah.
Just for the sake of being, like, mutually helping each other, you know?
The problem with St. Louis, though, is the fact that we don't really have anybody, like, who we could do that with. I guess maybe, like, Tina Turner, but... But, like, she hasn't been, like, a St. Louis girl for a long time, so.
Well, we've got, like, Story of the Year, but that was kind of a phase, you know?
I mean, like, Ludo, they've broken up since, you know, since then. Like, MU330, of course. I mean, they
still do shows.
Yeah, they still do shows occasionally.
That is a close one, because they play, like, off-Broadway a lot.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is that off-Broadway is, like, is a tiny mm-hmm. venue.
Mm-hmm. You know, you can still go see Steve Ewing. Like, I mean, there wouldn't be a homecoming, but like,
until recently, like, Chuck Berry as well.
Some members of Mama's Pride, like, you know, getting together to do some stuff, you know, that. But yeah, there's no, like, super massive St. Louis artist, and so therefore we don't have, like, that thing, you know, of a St. Louis artist.
We really need the next. We need the next big artist from St. Louis. We're overdue. We need one.
I mean, the last big one was what, Nelly?
Yeah,
probably or Chingy. Yeah,
Chingy. I forgot about Chingy, but Nelly was way bigger than Chingy.
Oh yeah, he was. But Chingy was a little more recent.
That's true.
Well, but Nelly had stuff since then. So yeah.
Oh, I mean, it's St. Louis needs to get somebody huge.
St. Louis, show me what you got.
Either way, that is the end of our show this week. We hope that you have enjoyed it. Remember, if you want to help out the show, you can go to our website, followthesoundpodcast.com, and click on the Amazon banner. It takes you to Amazon. Do all your shopping. We get a little bit of money and doesn't cost you anything extra. It's very simple. Or you can go to followthesoundpodcast.com/Amazon. Once again, thank you to lineupmedia.fm. Check out all the great programs that we have on lineupmedia.fm by going to lineupmedia.fm. And finding whatever your heart's desire might be for a podcast. And remember, if you don't actually find a podcast on there that you like, do you have an idea for a podcast? We're always looking for new talent to throw up there. So you can get in contact with us through the website and have fun there. But if you want to get in contact with us, like from Follow the Sound, you can find us on Facebook at our group, Follow the Sound. Or you can find us on the page at Follow the Sound. Or you can find us on Twitter at I Follow the Sound.
Mm-hmm.
Boom.
Boom.
Also, we're getting an Instagram account set up. So if you guys want to check out that, it'll be pretty nice. I'm looking forward to actually posting some concert photos and stuff like that. Should be pretty good. But this has been another episode of Follow the Sounds This Week in Music History. I am your host, Brian Kroc. And... of course, along with me, as always, was Jacob Crum.
Hey, St. Louis, or St. Lunatics, let's get another city free, huh? And you haven't put out an album in 7 years. I'm calling you out.
Wow, that was long. And Greg Harvey.
The album Space Jazz.
Remember, if you hear it, Space Jazz, don't follow that sound.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.